The Time. Whether to stay or go, the big question when it comes to Afghanistan, walking away with some big Oscar prizes on the West Coast. And should we pay for security for people running for president? Interesting question, huh? Hey, everybody. Kate Delaney, America Tonight, the name of this show, Coast to Coast and all those nooks and crannies in between. Hope you had a great weekend. Sad weekend in Afghanistan, but what else is new? Unfortunately, this time on the heels of the Quran burning, which I am sure you remember, we discussed it on our last show, cleaning Bagram Air Force Base. Some of the people who were charged with doing that decided to burn the Qurans, a handful. I think there were like two or three that they found, supposedly, because now there's a big-time investigation going on. Leon Panetta, the defense secretary, apologized for it and said that he would look into it, and this wasn't procedure. And, of course, religious materials are important. And then our president bent over backwards and apologized for the burning of the Quran. But what good did that do? No good. Ultimately, two more soldiers were killed. There's been rioting outside of Kabul, anti-American sentiment reigning around all over the place in that country. When I say nooks and crannies for this audience, how about the nooks and crannies there? And those nooks and crannies were filled with a lot of hatred for the U.S., some flag burning, that kind of thing. But more important than those displays were the fact that two soldiers were actually killed. Soldiers who were busy trying to mentor people to help this government in the future, part of a big program that the ambassador, Ryan Crocker, to Afghanistan felt was the real way to transition this country, just like they did in Iraq. And unfortunately now, because of the two soldiers being killed in an Afghan-guarded ministry, they've had to clear the program out. They've had to get everybody out of there. They had to recall all the NATO personnel working inside of those ministries, anybody, because that's how they were really thinking this was the way to go. And now the ambassador is saying, we need to redouble our efforts. And Senator John McCain is backing him up. He's saying, yeah, absolutely. He's on the Armed Services Committee, and he says, we need to do this. We need to dig in. We need to help them out. No matter what, because this will affect us in this country with Al-Qaeda and the potential terrorist attack in the future anywhere in the West, but particularly in the United States. So what do we have to do? The Taliban says that the two soldiers who were killed, which was a U.S. lieutenant colonel and a major, was absolutely retaliation for the inadvertent, which is what the military is saying, burning of religious materials, that's why that happened. And then there's now just another bomb that went off in an airport. So it's more than hairy scary over there. Do we need to redouble our efforts, or do we need to redouble our efforts to pack up and get out of Dodge? You know how I feel. I think we need to pack up and get out of Dodge, because I don't want to be behind a microphone saying, oof, we're in our 15th year in Afghanistan. We're almost there. We're almost there. If we can just tweak a few things, if we can rebuild those relationships, and if we can try and help establish this government. It seems to me that President Hamid Karzai, even though when he comes to Washington, he smiles for any of the media that happens to cover him, and it seems as though he's having a cordial conversation with our president. To me, any time the chips are down, this guy is willing to fling them in our face instead of backing the United States or backing NATO. Even if something horrific happens, and I'm not saying on a grand scale, but why not ever back the United States when you think of how much money has been pumped into that country from our coffers? 800-259-5791. Let's go to Don in Wyoming. Hey, Don.
Hi, Kate. How are you?
I'm good. Did you watch the Oscars? I bet you're the one person watching the Oscars.
Well, just the one. Yes. Over a billion. I hope that wasn't just the one. Man. Hey, Kate.
What's up, man?
Yeah, I did. You know, my mom and all, we're big movie nuts, so we always try to watch it, you know. And they're interesting. The foreign film was an Iranian film. Oh, film from Iran.
It was interesting, and there was a... Wasn't somebody that came up and spoke, wasn't she a Pakistan woman talking about the horrific things happening to women?
Yeah, it was the short film mm-hmm. winner. And,
yeah.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, you sit there and you say, you were just mentioning about the amount of money that we pumped into Afghanistan. Gotta admit, Kate, they didn't ask us to come over there. I mean, it wasn't like they were saying, hey, yeah, come in here and pump all this money into us and turn us into a democracy. We went in there as retaliation because they were hiding the Taliban, or the Bin Laden, you know, and we got rid of the Taliban because the Taliban was the one backing it.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, sometimes when you know, it's kind of like when you go to a restaurant, you pump out $100. They didn't tell you to come there, did they? No, they're happy to have your business, but, you know, same thing. I'm sure they're happy all the money we put in there, but they're not going to turn around and step out, put their neck out on the ledge and go, you know, when probably the mood of the country right now is they want the Americans gone. So, you know, so they're not going to stick their neck out for America. You kidding me? So who's going to do that? So
So you just answered the question. So why should we be there? They're not even backing us. We're having soldiers that are getting blown up. We're spending money. Why should we even do it?
I would assume the reason why is because we don't want to see it happen again.
Yeah.
I was hoping that, well, democracy will take and, you know, they won't be, you know, this Taliban won't be around and we won't have another Bin Laden somewhere down the road. But I'm not, you know, it's, well, there's other places in the world getting rough in Somalia. You know, we're still dealing with the regime in Iran and, you know, even the guy when he was up there tonight, in a roundabout way, he basically, you know, the Iranian people are rich in history and tradition, and they are. I mean, you know, that's part of where civilization began, I guess. But, you know, point is, the majority of the people in Iran, they're just really, they're good people. They're not part of this regime, you know, that's been funding terrorism for 30 years, and, you know. And so, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you go in there and you bomb all these people and, all these people, they really, you know, they just didn't have a way to overthrow the people that are running. You saw the last election they had there. They had tons of riots going on. They just didn't have the military help like they did in Libya to overthrow the regime. So, I gotta give our State Department, you know, Obama, you know, it's gonna be hard for the Republicans to point to Obama and say he's done a bad job of foreign policy, Jake, because I think the guy's done at least a decent job, maybe not a great one, you know, but it's going to be, you know, it's a tough call. You know, I'm glad I'm not in the position. I mean, you know, you sit there and say, well, let's go kill, you know, these bad guys, and you know that innocent people are going to get killed along the way. You know?
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, a lot of people say, well, that's Tom Iran, but they sure, let's kill 6 million people that are... And probably 45 million of them don't
want to
have anything to do with their
food.
You know?
Yeah, Don, we're going to end on that note. As we move from drones and collateral damage and being in the shoes of having to make that call to the weekly re-racks, some great interviews you might have missed along the way. Hang with us.
So you're a maker of something. Woodcrafts, fishing lures, glass designs, jewelry, purses, perfumes, goat's milk, soap. Whatever it is, you made it here in America. Now you're eager for people to buy your products right here locally. Instead of buying competing products made on the other side of the world, right? Then you need to check out localmakers.com. Support America. Buy and sell locally at localmakers.com. Doesn't matter if you're a home-based business or a major manufacturer, localmakers.com offers an easy way to connect with customers within your local community, as well as across the U.S., simply by entering a zip code. And there's no cost to join. So if you're a maker who needs buyers, go to localmakers.com and stock your products on one of our shelves. localmakers.com. promoting, preserving, and supporting your neighbor's manufacturing businesses.
Jim Newcomer from Midas Resources, February 24th, 2012. Gold opened this morning at $1,777.60. A one-ounce gold coin can be purchased for $1,821.31, $9,10.66 for a half-ounce, and $455.33 for a quarter-ounce. That's $1,821.31, $9,10.66, and $455.33.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. Have you ever wondered why banks, stockbrokers, investment advisors won't talk about gold IRAs? Wait a sec. Gold and silver is going up while Congress is trying to settle on the next debt increase. And there's no end to this madness. That old 401k and IRA can be converted into physical gold without tax consequences. I explained this in my book, 10 Reasons to Buy Gold. Don't let time slip away. Call for your free copy today, 800-686-2237. Get away from that Washington spin and get honest answers about gold. 800-686-2237. The book is free, 800-686-2237.
Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado, and to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis. But it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America. And he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier. And I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
The journey starts beneath the stars. I stand alone. I put all my fears to all these years and swept away the known. And no, I run this town to be near you. No, gray skies ever turn blue.
On America Tonight, of course, with the Iraq War, the statistics just gruesome. When we talk about troop casualties overall, 4,486. And when we talk about the wounded, 32,226. And so sad to all of us, of course, 20% of which were serious brain or spinal injuries. Joining us now, he's actually in our virtual green room, is Dr. Todd Baker. He knows all about this because he left his wife and his young daughter, infant daughter, in fact, back in 2007, to join the 86th Combat Support Hospital for his, you ready for this, folks, his 15th-month tour in Iraq. 15 months he went to war. But how scary was it? I don't know that anyone's actually prepared for that. Doc, thanks for coming on America Tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And you've got a book out called Baghdad ER, 15 Minutes. And you talk about in this book the traumas, of course, and I mentioned the statistics, but you also talk about some of the triumphs that you saw and what you faced in that country as well. What was the toughest thing day one on the job that you think people just didn't understand was going on there?
Oh, that's easy. Day one, we arrived there in Baghdad to replace the 28th Combat Support Hospital, and we weren't touching any patients. We were going to overlap for 7 days and just watch them work and see how the system worked. And first patient that they laid there and laid on the bed in the trauma room, 19-year-old American soldier, detonated bomb, had both of her arms blown off at the elbows and burns all over her face. And just watching that team that had been there 15 months resuscitate, you know, this American hero. And there was no panic. There was no, you know, somebody screaming, I need this, I need this. It was just watching a machine in action. And in 12 minutes, they had 6 units of blood, large IVs into her. She was intubated, put on a breathing machine, and en route to the operating room, unlike anything we had ever seen. And we're all looking at each other, essentially saying, okay, what's your name again? You know, we're going to be doing this.
Yeah, exactly. So you knew, I mean, you right the second you were in there, you knew that it was pretty much going to be that way the entire time. And was it like that? I mean, was it really just a MASH unit everywhere you went?
It was pretty steady. We got there midway through the troop surge there at the end of 2007. And then it ramped up quite a bit with the Al-Sadr uprising in the spring of 2008 for several weeks. But then after that, Al-Sadr had called, he called a ceasefire and it just stopped. It died. The effects of the troop surge came in and our volume dropped tremendously by the time we had left.
Yeah. And seeing the volume drop like that, did that give you more time to spend maybe with patients or follow up to see how somebody was doing? Because I could imagine that this touched you. For example, the first story you just told me, were you curious? I know that's not the mentality when you have to treat, treat, treat. But did you get any follow-ups on any of the patients?
We did on a few, but to be honest with you, you know, we put over 4,000 patients through there. Mm. And these weren't minor broken bones. These are, you know, really sick people. And you know, part of the job was, I don't know names, I don't know anything like that. You know, I've got a hero in front of me, and I either saved them, and I say our team either saved them or they didn't. And to be honest with you, we didn't get just a ton of follow-up.
Yeah. I mentioned the brain injuries at the top. What were most of the injuries that the patients that you treated, what were most of them suffering from?
The trauma patients we saw, most of them were IED injuries, gunshot wounds, rocket attacks, and the EFP, the explosively formed penetrators. And so the injuries we would see with most of those devices other than a gunshot wound would be amputation. So amputated arms and legs, that was our big thing that we saw all day, every day there for a long time.
Yeah. Now I would imagine there were some incredible techniques that you learned and used in those military hospitals, because you mentioned how many amputations that you had to work on and perfecting that, I'm sure. What were some of the techniques that you could tell us about that you used, that you learned there?
excuse me. Absolutely. Number one, tourniquets in the field. And by the time I got there in 2007, you know, we fell into a system that was already in place. You know, nothing special about us. This is the system the military had put into place to take care of their soldiers. And these guys would all come in with one, two, three, or four tourniquets on to stop the bleeding. And then we had blood waiting for them before they arrived. And so as fast as a nurse, medic, or one of our docs could get a line into a patient, sometimes within 60 seconds of arrival of the patient to our ER, we had blood going back into the body. Absolutely amazing the way that saved lives, and that's been adapted and now in big trauma centers in the U.S. That's now standard practice.
Yeah, wasn't the survival rate pretty good? I thought I read somewhere where it was like 96% for the people that came, you know, got out of Baghdad, the ER, Baghdad ER, how they survived, right?
Yes, ma'am. During our time, we had a 96% American soldier survival rate, but it wasn't just us. The 28th cache before us had the exact same, and units before them. Once again, so to me, it's just a testament of the system that had been put into place, and all of us were essentially cogs in a wheel.
Yeah. Did you ever come under any kind of fire while you were trying to save the heroes that you were mentioning?
We did. We were mortared a time or two, but essentially during the Al-Sadr uprising in the spring of 2008, we came under rocket fire pretty continuously for about a 6 to 8 week period, multiple volleys of 2 to 10 rockets at a time, multiple times per day were headed our direction. And there were even times that our ER was evacuated out down to essential personnel only. And I can tell you, not one time did any of my team leave. They all stayed there to take care of our soldiers that we had.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple times your team. So was it like a family to you?
Oh, it's still a family to me. We had three physicians. I just happened to be the highest ranking guy, so that just made me the chief by default. We had 9 nurses and 16 medics. But the interesting thing was, of the three physicians, none of us had deployed before. Out of our 9 nurses, 4 were straight out of school. And our 16 medics, we only had 3 that had any combat experience whatsoever. And so we were very young and very green heading into that situation. And we grew together. You know, we cried together, we laughed together, and we grew together as a family. And, you know, we weren't all that great at first. And within a couple of months, we were good.
Yeah. Hey, you said you laughed together. So you must have had some lighthearted moments, obviously. Doctors are known for pranks. Did you just forget about the surroundings and when you could to loosen things up? Were people joking, pulling pranks and jokes on each other?
Well, we always did that kind of stuff. And, a buddy of mine from college even sent me a remote control General Lee from the Dukes of Hazzard to drive around. So I would drive that around just to get laughs out of people. And we had a good time as much as we could.
Wow. So the reaction when you drove that around, did it just automatic laughs?
Well, actually, people would start singing the song. From the Dukes of Hazzard. That's what I got more than anything.
Good for you. Good for him for doing that. So now you make the transition. You come back. What was that like transitioning from the craziness of the Baghdad ER to working back in a U.S. hospital?
Well, kind of on two different levels. First, my 5-month-old daughter, when I left her, she was 5 months and 21 months when I came back. So I kind of felt like the man that had moved in with mommy, if that makes sense. She really did not warm up to me for about a year or so until after I returned. On the job side, it's actually, as an emergency physician, I'm happy to take care of everybody. Obviously, a lot different types of injuries I see here than I saw in Baghdad. Sometimes I struggle to relate to somebody that's kind of worked up over a minor injury, and I'm just thinking in my head, the things I could tell you, But it's worked out okay.
Now the book, I mentioned the book at the top, called Baghdad ER. You're going to give some of this money to a great cause, the Wounded Warrior Foundation. Tell people a little bit more about that, because I'm not sure everybody knows that program.
Oh, it's a wonderful foundation that not only helps our troops when they come home, but then helps them afterward. It's kind of, everybody's there to support them in the first month or two or 3 months once these heroes come back wounded. But this organization is there a year later and 2 years later and really makes a difference in the lives of our heroes. And I can't say enough about them. The amazing things that I see them do, and they're a very worthy cause, and I'm honored to do so.
So if people get it on Amazon because it's Baghdad ER, then automatically a percentage of that would end up going to the cost.
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
And then you can also get a signed copy at my website, Baghdad ER.
Oh, terrific. Well, thank you so much for everything that you did for the people that you met along the way, and now transitioning back into our hospital system as well. We appreciate it. Dr. Baker, you have a great night.
You too. Thank you for having me.
In the past, I've taken a lot of different vitamins, some through health food stores, some that friends recommend.
Colleen talking about her experience with Super C Veg.
And with the Super C Veg, I was seeing a lot better results.
Super C Veg with Vita D and C-Cal is the most powerful dietary food supplement in the world today, and nothing else comes close.
Super C Veg is a whole food that makes me feel good.
Think of Super C Veg as the un-vitamin.
I have taken other things, and they just didn't work. This seems to work for me.
And Super C-Veg comes with a 90-day money-back guarantee.
Store-bought vitamins do not have the supplement and the full, whole feeling I have from Super C-Veg.
Get 15% off your first purchase on our website, supercveg.com. That's super, SEAVEG.com. At checkout, enter coupon code UNVITAMIN. Or place your order at 866-C-VEG. That's 866-732-8344. Eating Super C-Veg daily is eating right.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Powerful forces are trying to destroy your health. It's a fact that we're surrounded by a sea of environmental toxins, from mercury in vaccines and dental fillings, to aluminum in chemtrails, to pesticides and toxic chemicals sprayed all over our food. Even nuclear radiation, which is still spewing out of Fukushima, has contaminated the water and food supply in the U.S. But there is a solution. Liquid Zeolite is an extraordinary natural formula which safely and effectively removes all kinds of toxins from the body, including capturing heavy metals,
pesticides, viruses, and radioactive particles. Use liquid zeolite from RestoreYourHealthNow.com for fatigue, headaches, digestion, memory loss, influenza, and joint pain. Zeolite comes with a money-back guarantee and is available at RestoreYourHealthNow.com. Learn how to get free bottles of zeolite at RestoreYourHealthNow.com or call 800-880-9976. That's 800-880-9976. 100% safe. 100% amazing. Try liquid zeolite today.
Hi, I'm Mark Craighead, founder of Crossbreed Holsters. I designed our top-selling holster, the Super Tuck Deluxe, to solve the problems of being poked, pinched, and gouged while carrying concealed. The Super Tuck Deluxe is the most comfortable, most concealable holster on the market today. We offer a 2-week free trial and a lifetime warranty.
Visit us at crossbreedholsters.com. Don't forget, crossbreedholsters.com.
In a coming-apart world, you need something to keep it tied together. That something is Atwood Rope, the highest quality rope made in the USA from exotic braids for military, rescue, arborists, shipyards, towline, or boating. Quality rope at affordable prices you and your customers can depend on. Find a dealer or shop online at atwoodrope.net. Enter promo code RADIO to receive 100 feet of 550 paracord free with purchase. Atwood Rope, working to keep the world tied together.
Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dried guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dried guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dried guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes 6 number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every meat eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our 1-year plus meat eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the freeze-dry guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
It's been so tough here in America tonight because we don't have football anymore. We miss football. We miss our Nail the Score segments. So we're very thrilled to welcome to the show Jordan Pugh. He plays for the Carolina Panthers, and you're going to love this. I mean, this guy is the everyman. He's the dime, the strong, the free safety. He's everything. And if you remember him from Texas A&M, boy, he certainly thrilled a lot of people during those years. And now, as I said, he's played for the Carolina Panthers for a couple of years and now heading into his third year. Jordan, thanks for jumping on America Tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. It's good to be on.
Hey, you know, when I said there in the beginning, I was talking about all the positions that you play, the different scenarios with safety. How do you like that? Do you like mixing it up, getting the opportunity in a lot of different packages and stuff?
Oh, yeah, of course. You know, you love playing all the different positions, and it's good to be used as a player like that. And it really, you get to learn the defense through every aspect, really, through every position, you know, being both safeties, the dime, nickel, even possible corner. You get to know the ins and outs, and that just makes you a better player as a whole.
Yeah. If you go after being drafted and then getting in the system, do you feel like now you really have your sea legs, you know the guys, you've been with the team, you know what you expect of yourself, but what everybody else around you expects? Is it good to get a couple of years under your belt?
Oh, definitely, because the comfort level, you can't help but get more comfortable as the years go on. You know, of course, you get to know your teammates on a deeper level. You get the chemistry down with them, you know, as a unit, as a group. And it's just good. And just the overall comfort level is different from my rookie year up to now. It's kind of been there and done that scenario, if you can get that. So it's good.
Now, I got to ask you this question. I don't know how you, when you make the transition from college to the pros, I don't know how you guys read those playbooks. I have to tell you this. One time, Emmett Smith let me take a little teensy peek at the playbook, and he said, you decipher this. And I had no idea that it was that difficult. And I think people listening to us, honestly, even football fans, as crazy as we are about the game, if you never played, especially at the college level or the pro level, but making that transition, do you feel like a doctor, like you're memorizing all this stuff, and you got to be good at that, right? Because you got to be where you are on the field when they're looking for you. You got to know, you know, who are you covering? What do you do in this case scenario? How tough is it to do that?
Oh man, you know, that's funny bringing back memories to my first day of training camp. you know, you get the playbook and you don't realize how big it is. You know, you get there and you carry around this 5-pound book. You know, you have to be able to break it down. You know, especially coming from college to pro level, it's so much extra detail. And especially being, you know, at the professional level and say particularly a position like safety where you have to know, where other players such as linebackers, D linemen need to align. It's so, you know, meticulous in detail, how the playbook is laid out. And when you first get it, it's almost overwhelming. It's like, man, how can I figure all this out in the short period of time that you give me? But, you know, that's where, you know, studying comes into play. You know, you have to study, you give with the older guys, you give with the veteran guys to help break it down. And it eventually comes along. And, you know, you get the transition and you just learn and go from there. And it's kind of a trial and error when you first get there. But then you get used to it and you just start playing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, everyone says this, too, and I used to travel with the Cowboys, so I saw when I was on the field how fast things moved, and I was really surprised. I guess I shouldn't say I was surprised, but I was trying to make that leap to the speed of the game. So everybody talks about the speed of the game. It's just so much more. Is that true? I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
As far as speed of the game, I get that question asked a lot. I think the biggest thing about the speed of the game is this. You know, everybody's big, everybody's fast, and everybody's strong, but it goes back to what we talked about with the playbook is knowing and understanding what you're doing. That makes you even faster. And the one thing that I learned being on the pro level so far is, you know, the thing that separates one player from another is how detailed you are as far as game planning and your preparation. You know, like I said before, everybody's big, fast, and strong, so that little minor detail can separate you from making the play and not making the play, and that in turn makes the game faster. And so, you know, with that question, I think it's more of the preparation level and the detail when it comes to your position, your assignment, and that's what makes you faster.
Yeah. You know, and you certainly know this, as you say, getting to know the team and the guys. You got a bunch of A&Mers on the team, so go Aggies. That's got to make you feel comfortable, huh?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, when you got a team full of guys you play with, especially me and Gushin. We knew each other because we played with each other down there. And it brings another comfort level being on the team.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And he's a crack-up, too, isn't he? He's known to be kind of that guy that busts chops.
Oh, yeah. He's always been that way. He was that way at Texas A&M. He's that way now. You know, that's just his personality.
Yeah. What do you guys make of all the conference switching, you know, like the Big 12, and you think of the rivalries. I think of A&M and Texas. I mean, that. Thank goodness for you because you were part of that whole thing. But now, as that is fading into the rearview mirror, how'd you feel about all that going on?
Well, when I first heard about it, I guess you could say I was almost in shock. You know, it was more of, wow, we really are going to the SEC. You know, it's exciting, but then at the same time, it's kind of like, man, you know, what's going to happen with the game against Texas or Oklahoma, Texas Tech? You know, you're kind of missing those rivalries that brewed up over the years. But as far as that, I think it's a good switch going to the SEC. You know, you're going to what's known as one of the best conferences in the country, if not the best. And, you know, and that's what you want. You want to be the best. You know, in order to be the best, you got to beat the best. And that's what everybody's saying about the SEC, and I'm excited about A&M going. You know, all the athletes that we have down there, the facilities, the way the program is going, it's about time we get that national spotlight, and I think it's a good move for us.
Yeah, and come on, you guys had to be busting chops on the Longhorns anyway because of that gigantic contract that Texas got, the Texas TV contract. Was that crazy?
Oh yeah, I remember when I first heard about that, and I actually I heard that's what that's really what a lot of the problems I guess came or stemmed from was that contract. And you know, when I heard about that, I was like, wow, you know, as I they're good and all, but I don't know about all that. But you know, that's what they want. That's how they handle it, and we had to go and handle our own business. So that's why we made that move.
Yeah. The in the off season, because, you know, now we just went through the whole Super Bowl and whatnot, it was a tough year for the Panthers, tough year for a lot of teams, frankly. We were, as a fan, we were thrilled that we had football back, and I know that all of you were on, and you, I'm sure, like everyone else, was on pins and needles waiting to see what was going to happen. But you finished 6-10, so you forget about that. You come back next season. What do you do in the off season, Jordan?
Oh, man, you just the off season, you just focus on what you can work on, really. You know, of course, you train to get your body to 100% to its peak performance. But also, you also have to reflect on how the season was, the previous season was. You know, of course, we know we were 6-10, and our record doesn't reflect how good we can be. You know, I think we had, I want to say, 21 guys, significant players put on IR throughout the entire season. And you get those guys back, and you just realize the potential that we have. You know, I think we can be a dangerous team next year, and that does nothing but build excitement for next year.
Yeah, no kidding. Do you, when you, of course, you've got a proud family. I mean, you know, you got lots of family, lots of relatives. Is everyone asking you for tickets all the time when you get in the league?
Oh, of course, yeah. Especially my family, man. My family, they're real supportive. Everybody wants to be at a game. Everybody wants to watch the game on TV, whatever it is, and. Oh, yeah, you get the ticket request all the time, but it's not too much, though. You know, family, they respect the fact that I play, and, you know, you get asked a lot. But they do want to go to the games to support.
Yeah. Hey, and speaking of supporting, bravo to you, because now you're in the beginning stages of this. You've already started it, the nonprofit, the Jordan Pugh Pushing Upward, Going Higher, and it's about awarding student-athletes, you know, looking deep and looking to see what they've done. Explain how you started it and what it means to you.
Well, I was sitting down, I'm always at my high school. You know, Coach Hughes, he's always been a big part of what I do, and he's been at every step, high school, college, and pro. So me and my mom, we were sitting down. I was just thinking about a way I could give back to my high school, not just my high school, but just kids in general. And so the thing that we came up with was the Jordan Pugh Pushing Upward, Going Higher Award, and we thought of passion, purpose, and performance. You know, the three things that you really need to excel in anything that you do. And so the biggest thing that I wanted to do was I wanted to give it to someone who was a crucial part of the team, a significant part of the team, who really didn't get a lot of credit, a lot of praise, you know. And so we gave it to a kid named Matt Olesini, who excelled academically, who had the passion to play, so had a good academic performance too as well. And so, and also out in the community. So we wanted to get a well-rounded individual who I thought deserved the award. So I sat down with my whole high school coach, Coach Hughes, and we came up with a few names, and we thought he deserved it. And now I'm looking at expanding it. You know, we're still in the working stages of that, but that's the biggest thing around it. Just give them to someone who doesn't get a lot of praise or a lot of notoriety and get it out to someone who really deserves it.
Yeah, and you're looking to maybe expand that to even other places, other schools maybe? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, other schools, even, you know, other nonprofits. It's, you know, it's in the beginning stages. We're working on that. But for this year, that was my biggest focus, was getting out to someone, you know, at my high school primarily who didn't get a lot of that notoriety.
Yeah, awesome. I think it's great. Jordan Pugh, what a delight it's been talking to you. We hope to catch up with you in the near future, and good luck this upcoming season. I know we got a long way, but good luck heading into the next season. We're like you. We want to play. I mean, we want you to play. We want to be out there. We want to be playing fantasy football and watching you. Jordan, thanks so much. It's been fun having you here on America Tonight.
All right, thank you. I appreciate the time.
Thanks.
What if pain could be reduced, ailments could be alleviated, physical and mental stress could be eased, and blood circulation increased, all by simply lying down? Introducing the original Biomat. The Biomat is an FDA-registered medical device that combines deep-penetrating infrared space-age technology and revitalizing negative ions with the incredible healing power of amethyst crystals. A Biomet can boost your immune system, relieve pain and stiffness, reduce stress and fatigue, and assist in detoxifying your body. Join the thousands of people reporting relief from chronic pain, fibromyalgia, arthritis, sports injuries, insomnia, and much more. Each Biomet comes with a lifetime trade-in and three-year warranty. Learn more at bio-mats.com, spelled bio-mats.com, or call 360-944-8692. That's 360-944-8692. Visit bio-mats.com today and enhance your life with a Biomat.
Have you ever seen a U.S. postage stamp featuring Abraham Lincoln, Ben Franklin, or George Washington? If you're into stamp collecting, you know it's a fun, affordable hobby. America's leading stamp dealer is the Mystic Stamp Company, and they want you to have their free 140-page color catalog. Go to mysticstampad.com, the website of the Mystic Stamp Company, serving stamp collectors since 1923. Mystic Stamp is well known in the industry for its experience, superior customer service, and an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. Go to mysticstampad.com to request your free 140-page U.S. stamp color catalog packed with collecting tips, special offers, color photos, and over 4,600 available stamps. Call 800-433-7811 or go to mysticstampad.com. That's 800-433-7811 and ask for your free U.S. stamp catalog or mysticstampad.com. Mystic Stamp Company, America's leading stamp dealer.
If you're having any problems with the IRS or a local revenue agency, I understand and I can help. I'm tax attorney Tony Dennison. When I was a kid, the IRS came after my mother's house because of mistaken information. Ever since then, I've dedicated my life to defending people in trouble with the IRS. I'm a real tax attorney, which means I have two law degrees, a standard law degree known as a JD, and a tax law degree known as a Master's of the Laws in Taxation. I've been practicing for 10 years and I've helped many of your fellow citizens in tax trouble. If you're in tax trouble, you don't need to be alone and you don't need to call one of those fake lawyer clearinghouses. Call me, Tony Dennison, at Dennison Tax Law, 952-886-7141, or on the web at DennisonTaxLaw.com. It may be the best call you make all year. Dennison Tax Law, 952-886-7141. And again, on the web at DennisonTaxLaw.com.
We're heading for that final turn of this hour of America tonight. Hey, everybody, Kate Delaney. The top of the show, a little bit of Oscar talk and Afghanistan and, of course, our re-rack as well. Worth mentioning here is I got a couple of people who hit me up through email as to who won for Best Actress. Wonder why that all of a sudden was a big deal. Best Actress was Meryl Streep. So if you missed it, she portrayed Margaret Thatcher to a T. Think back to the Thatcher years. And she did a great job, actually, I believe, of portraying her. I saw that movie. And she won an Oscar for it. It was her third Oscar. So how about that? That was one of the highlights, I would say, of that show. If you turn on the tube or you're listening to the radio after I'm off your radio, I guarantee when you get those snippets, you know, at the top of the hour, you'll probably hear something about the Oscars and how Billy Crystal did and was it the best Oscars ever and the artist won how many Oscars for best picture and director and actor and that kind of stuff. And that'll probably be the biggest buzz out of Hollywood over the movie scene. And we do the cheap movie reviews each and every week. We do that in our third hour on America Tonight on Friday. And it's a lot of fun because, you know, we have these weeks. It comes in waves where you actually see that, oh, yeah, there's that movie. I want to see it. I've been wanting to see it for a long time. And finally, there's one that you want, and you're ready to plunk down that $9 and grab that overpriced concession popcorn and watch it on the big screen and suffer through all that you have to suffer through with the really half an hour of previews anymore. But it's worth it because this is a movie you had on your list. But the list, I think, for most people is far and few between. That's why I like doing the cheap movie reviews, so you kind of get a sense of what's out there, whether you should just wait until you can stream it or you need to go out and see it on a much bigger, bigger screen. Because there is a difference. We all know that, yes, we have these tiny, tiny devices where we can watch movies. Pretty soon, that's what it's going to be. Everything happens on the phone. So you'll be plugged in. You probably can already do that where you can watch, well, you can watch videos and listen to music. And you know, we see on the really tiny computers and the iPads, people are watching movies. So that has to be troubling, I think, to the movie business. It's all about convenience and zip, zap, and zoo. So, I don't know, will they have individual streaming stations? You'll just go to a movie theater and you can just pick whatever flavor you want. I don't think that's so far-fetched. Maybe it'll be like that, where you pay a certain price, you go in and you can pick out something that you want to stream, and it would be like streaming stations, probably. One thing we know won't happen if we're going back in a time machine, Afghanistan, I don't see streaming stations there anytime soon. It's more a question of can the U.S. and Afghanistan, at least with the troops on the ground, can now the soldiers work with our troops? That's a curious thing because you think of the Quran burning, and the reaction to that. It was a couple of Qurans. It's worth repeating this at Bagram Air Force Base, and that is really turned into a huge pit for, I think, the people that are still there, because already we've had a couple of troops that were killed where they were in a ministry area protected by Afghan soldiers. So you say right off the bat, what's up with that? Can we not work together? Did somebody leak this out? How is that possible that happened? Sure, it's a war zone, and sure, the Taliban could shoot up the soldiers and go in and get our soldiers, but this anger that has now bubbled over again and the controversy in the wake of what happened, I think it's going to be pretty tough to overcome it. I really do. It's disrupted the government. It's disrupted the relationship, and I think it's wrong, but it's done damage, absolutely. And when you've got somebody opening fire on two U.S. advisors, because yes, they were troops, I'll say, but they were advisors, the lieutenant colonel and the major, and they're at a ministry's command and control center in the capital. That is bad. That is a bad piece of business. They were shot. I'm going to give you more details. I was going to do this at the top, but I'm going to do it now. The Americans were shot, ready for this, in the back of their heads as they sat at their desks. That's what happened. So they were sitting at their desks and they were killed. They were murdered. And this is rage over what happened with the Quran, supposedly. But was this somebody who was an infiltrator, or was this somebody that was strictly about the Quran burnings or some other reason? They're leaning toward the Quran burning, but they have to investigate. And what a sick, twisted thing that is. I mean, how the killer came in, was able to have his weapon and just simply walk away, and nobody stopped him. To me, that says something. To me, that makes me wonder what the divide is between the Afghan soldiers and these mentors, which, by the way, that program is shut down now. So the NATO folks, U.S. folks that were involved in this, and there was a bunch, are now told to get out of there. And there have been 6 days of deadly protests over this burning that have, if we were going to tally everything up, 30 people dead, and that includes four U.S. soldiers. Four U.S. soldiers because of this. And how much is too much? Well, one is too much. How long do we continue to go on with this charade? You think of the cultural barriers, think of the language barriers, the Americans that were slaughtered without even knowing it. I mean, they had no idea. They had no idea what was happening. I'm sure they felt safe enough because of the work that they were doing. And the answer is you're not safe. If you're an observer, a soldier, an officer, a security contractor, if you're there and you're in Afghanistan, you are not safe. And 9 have been killed in the airport bomb. That was the latest thing that happened. So 7 U.S. military trainers were wounded when a grenade was thrown at their base in northern Afghanistan. 7. Ugh. And this is over an inadvertent burning of the holy book, of their holiest books. I would have to think that you have to take a hard look if you're running this, if you're the leader of the free world, if you're the president of the United States, if you're the commander, you have to take a hard look at what's happening in Afghanistan and pretend you're not running for re-election. But you have the ambassador, Ryan Crocker, who worked under the Bush administration in Iraq, who says, listen, we just have to double up our efforts. We need more. We can't let this slide away. Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, this would be a very bad thing. We can't let that happen. We can't let that happen. Wow. And my answer is, I think we need to get out of there. We can't put more of our lives at risk and continue to just dig our heels in there. I don't understand why we want to do that if there is no end in sight, there is no goal in sight that is doable, and unless we just want to commit indefinitely, continue to do that. A lot of people were talking over the weekend, this is our last word for this hour, and it relates to the Quran, as to whether or not the president should have apologized. Now, Leon Panetta, the Secretary of Defense, did apologize for it. I mean, to me, it really could have stopped there. The president didn't need to apologize for what happened, and it didn't matter anyway because he apologized and still 4 soldiers were slaughtered anyway. So this was an easy thing for the Republicans to jump on. One of them was Rick Santorum, who attacked the president's apology and said there was nothing deliberately done wrong here. And I believe that. I think this was an accidental thing. We'll see what the investigation says.
Right around the country and all 5 of the states, you're listening to America Tonight with Kate Delaney.